The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
the beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan. Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the heart of the Missouri Ozarks, I am Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert, and welcome to our humble bunker, everybody. We are broadcasting to you from the heartland of the Ozarks, in the Crane, Missouri building,
yes.
The secret bunker.
Yes, which is the middle room behind the studio at Skywatch
between
TV.
Our offices. Yeah.
This would have been formerly the stock area of the grocery store.
It's pretty great, though.
Yes, it is, and we're blessed to be here today. May 10th, 2015, happy Mother's Day.
Thank you, honey. Happy Father's Day next month to you.
Well,
I'll just wish you ahead of time.
It's a day that, it's a secular holiday, but certainly one that, if nothing else, provides us a good reminder to honor and respect those who gave us life, gave us a sense of direction. Mm-hmm. We pray that that your mother has been a blessing to you throughout your life. In this fallen world, that's not always the case for every one of us, but still, the Lord commanded us to honor our fathers and mothers, and we just give thanks to our mothers. I know that your mother was a wonderful woman who, when you look at her story, and really consider where she came from and the children that she's raised, you and your sisters, who are all awesome, each in your own way, is
just a little bit crazy.
Yeah, and my mother the same way. Starting in a very humble background, your mother born in a coal camp,
mm-hmm.
in southeast Kentucky. My mother born on a farm in the middle of North Dakota. Well, actually, southeast North Dakota, but raised in the middle of North Dakota. And you know all of that. In God's plan, in His wisdom, for some reason, culminating in you and I here today, and who knows what implications, what ripples we're sending out across the pond of humanity that will, in a generation or two, manifest in some unexpected way.
Twisted behavior here and there.
A daughter with purple hair.
I know.
Oh, that had never happened.
Oh, I love her hair. You know what? She would, nothing she could do to herself would make her any less beautiful. She's gorgeous inside and out.
It was funny though when she posted the picture of the blue tinted pillowcase. it just struck me, and I posted this, and I guess she thought it was funny. I hope she did anyway, because I didn't mean it to criticize her choice of hair color, because it does look pretty striking, mm-hmm. and she carries it well. But her pillowcase reminded me of an Oompa Loompa. It just looked like an Oompa Loompa. I'm sorry. So anyway, I just thought that was kind of funny. Well, we pray that you had a wonderful day, and that as you. I've heard this, that you've had an opportunity to call your mother, see your mother, and just let her know that you love her. So
I hear thunder.
Yeah. One thing we're finding here that in the Ozarks, I mean, we knew that in Illinois, as most of the Midwestern United States, the Plains states, the Northern Plains, really anywhere from the Gulf Coast north, the center part of the United States, from anywhere from late March through, September, August mainly, we can get some pretty impressive thunderstorms. Mm-hmm. But what we're finding out is that here in Southwest Missouri, we're living in a county that borders on the state of Arkansas. We're actually closer to Tulsa, Oklahoma, which I didn't realize when we first came here. We're closer to Tulsa than we are to any of the major cities in Missouri. Closer to Tulsa than we are to Kansas City or St. Louis.
Yes.
So, and Tulsa is right in the smack dab in the middle of storm chaser country.
Oh, yeah.
So we're finding out that we get some of that overflow, those Okies, our friends down there at Prophecy Watchers, Bob and Gary, are just more than happy to share their storms up this way.
Why is it so windy down there? Just asking.
Yeah. So anyway, if you hear any rumble in the background, we're recording this mid-morning, and we're expecting storms most of the day, which means I'm going to get out of cutting the lawn again today. And by lawn, I mean the 2 acres around the place that we've got now.
Yeah. The 2 of 10.
2 of 10, yeah. The rest of it's pasture.
Yeah.
And apparently there's a neighbor that we haven't met yet who's, at some point when it dries out enough, is going to be cutting that for cattle. So, yeah. But anyway, we appreciate you joining us today, and we're just going to let fly here. There's a bunch of interesting things that have been taking place in recent days, and see if we can get caught up on as much of it as we can.
One of the first things I want to bring up is something we mentioned this morning in Gilbert House Fellowship, and that is the TV series Dig. You and I often talk about memes in media, and mm-hmm. one of the memes that's been percolating through media, and by that I mean not just news and television shows, but video games and graphic novels and movies and just about anything that you consume that is considered entertainment mm-hmm. or infotainment, as the news is these days. One of the big memes, and this is something that is to make you think about an idea or a plot or whatever. It's a way of convincing people. It's a propaganda, actually, is what it is. Is about a twisting of biblical prophecy. There's something tantalizing about giving people a peek at, just a peek at truth, but twisting it enough that you give them poor exegesis of the Bible. You give them a poor picture of what God is really trying to tell us. And this TV series Dig is just intriguing enough, mm-hmm. just has enough truth in it that I think some Christians are watching it and thinking, wow, somebody is trying to promote, you know, prophecy.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they are, but they're getting a lot of it wrong.
Well, it's not Christian prophecy, first of all.
No, it is not.
And secondly, what Christian prophecy they have is filtered through a lens. It's a compelling story. One of the guys created this series is the guy behind the TV series Heroes that we talked about in years past, mm-hmm. Which is a pro-transhumanist mm-hmm. piece, basically, meme or propaganda. Mm-hmm. The 10-part series just concluded with the final episode this past week. And I didn't watch all of the episodes, and some of them, I'll be honest, I was kind of reading while I was watching. So I was, you know, only paying half attention.
In other words, it's not always compelling entertainment, but.
Well, not to me, but I think you're right though. There are people who will find it easier to sit down and watch a television program like this and absorb information that way than mm-hmm. actually open a Bible and dig into it and then start reading commentaries on it to better mm-hmm. understand it. Just like many of us, and self-included, come up with ideas. And every now and again, I'll read in the Bible and think, well, that's not the way I thought it was. Now, why did I think it was that way? Say, oh, yeah, because I watched the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston every year around Easter and got this idea that Moses came down with these two tablets that had 10 laws on it, written in Roman numerals with the finger of God, you know, and spoken in King James English, because that's how John the Baptist talks. And if it's good enough for John the Baptist, that's good enough for me. But that's not how it is. In the Bible, and we just read that this morning as we read through Exodus 27 through 31, that the tablets were the tablets of testimony.
Yes.
Not the Ten Commandments.
And there was a lot of stuff written on
it. And there was a lot of stuff on there. Not just the Ten Commandments, but stuff on how to create the tabernacle, how to construct it, the types of materials and gemstones that were supposed to be used. Even instructions as to who the craftsmen were who were supposed to be doing it.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oholiab and Mahalal will be the guys who are going to build all this for you. Because I filled them with my spirit and a spirit of knowledge and a spirit of ability.
Ability,
a spirit
exactly.
of ability. And so stuff that I thought I knew that turned out not to be true when you actually start reading the book. But I think there are a lot of people who see Dig and come away the same way.
It reminds me of that wonderful scene in The Simpsons many years ago where the lawyer, you know, this lawyer that they're always going to for opinion pieces, and he's the worst lawyer in the world, is supposed to defend Homer in a trial. And he walks into the courtroom and Homer, you know, asks him essentially, well, did you do a lot of digging? You know, did you look at the law and this and that? He says, well, no, I saw Matlock and they were talking kind of about it last night in a bar. The sound was down, but I got the gist of it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's how a lot of us, and again, I say this self-included, have come away with a lot of ideas about what God wants from us, what is in the Bible, from things that we've absorbed from the culture. And your eternal destination is too important to make up your mind about it from the fiction aisle at the bookstore.
In fact, most people do more research on what car they're going to buy and invest more time into that decision than they invest in their eternal decision.
Uh-huh. Well, people... I would argue, is we'll even spend more time thinking about whether or not they should switch brands of toothpaste in a given week than whether or not they should, than about what they should be concerned about, which is, you know, where am I going to be 1 second after my heart stops beating and, you know, take my final breath.
Exactly. Well, as far as DIG is concerned, I really recommend that, especially those of you who really have a handle on Bible prophecy and you're not going to be misled by the inaccuracies in this show. I want you to watch it just to see what it is that the vast majority of viewers is supposed to believe about the race toward a new temple in Jerusalem, because that's really at the heart of this.
Yeah.
And you've got at least three, if not more, factions that are competing to pro, against. There's one faction in Texas that I'm still trying to wrap my head around that is essentially a sort of an Old Testament married to a cult preacher. You know, there's this preacher that is heading up this organization that's raised a bunch of clones. And I don't know what the source of the clone, you know, is, but these young boys that have been raised are they each have to go through a test, and if they fail the test, then they're out.
Yeah.
The one that survives the testing is, I think they were saying that he was going to be the high priest.
Yeah. A young boy raised in forgive us if we throw
give
any spoilers
away some of the
out
plot,
here, but you know, in order to discuss it, we're going to have to throw out some information.
Spoilers
here.
Ahead.
But there's a Christian cult basically that is in a compound somewhere in New Mexico in the desert, and raising up these boys. And unbeknownst to these young boys who are, you know, approaching the age of 13, there are more than one, and maybe more than two or three, who are raised in separate sections of the compound so that they don't know about the existence of the others. And at least one is executed in the desert because he decides to run. And that's because of a belief that the high priest will be one whose feet have never touched the soil.
Right.
He's got to be pure.
Right.
In other words. And of course, the first sacrifice will be the unblemished red heifer.
And once they have been ordained in you know, at the age of 13, they've gone through a ceremony and been chosen, then this boy is allowed to actually then touch his feet to the ground.
Mm-hmm. So this Christian pastor is working in cahoots, obviously, with a cabal in Jerusalem that's trying to find a way to reestablish the temple on the Temple Mount, which, of course, is problematic today because that's the site of the Dome of the Rock, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, the golden-domed mosque that is was established you know, on that site. So in order to establish a new temple, you may well have to destroy the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and that was part of the conspiracy going on behind the scenes. There was an attempt to blow a dam that would then flood the underground chambers beneath the Temple Mount that would destroy the foundation of the Al-Aqsa Mosque and cause it to collapse. And this was supposed to happen while the red heifer was being sacrificed.
Mm-hmm.
And this group believed that apparently it was going to usher in the end of the world as we know it. The factions opposing, there was a group called the Essenes, E-S-S-E-N-E-S. And those are mentioned, we know about the Essenes from the cache of documents found at Qumran,
right,
the Dead Sea Scrolls. So you've got this group that has been around for a couple thousand years trying to prevent the reestablishing of the daily sacrifices at the temple in Jerusalem. And willing to commit murder in order to do it, because apparently God needs us to wield his sword. And then at the middle of this, you've got this world-weary, scarred FBI agent played by, what is his name, Jason Isaacs.
Yes.
Great actor, and it's a really good cast. Anne Hesch plays his boss, but also his part-time lover. So, an interesting... interesting plotting, but again, don't take your understanding of end times prophecy from DIG, because it's not right. Well, one of the things that they did in there that I did catch, and I think a lot of Christians are, many Christians are prone to this, and that is, you know, in seeking guidance, they tend to use the Bible as sort of like a magic eight ball, you know, play Bible roulette. I'll just randomly open a page, put my finger on the page, and whatever that verse says, that's my horoscope for the day, basically.
Yeah.
And that's not how you use the Bible.
No, it is not.
But
it is not.
You can even find a Bible roulette app, by the way, if you want to put one on your
own. Oh, great.
Yeah. But again, that is not how God is to be used. He is not a genie in a lamp to be conjured on demand. He is not there to dispense advice on demand. And if anything comes of, you know, this Bible roulette, I would argue that it's going to be guided. If it's guided by a spirit at all, it's going to be guided by a spirit not loyal to the Lord. So,
well, I don't want, you know, that we're talking about end times prophecy and the memes that are out there. At Charisma News, you told me about this, and I was looking at the article just now. There's an article about the five signs that show us that we're in the last days.
Yeah.
And one of those is that the Temple Institute, which is represented in the or portrayed as another kind of institute in the TV show Dig, last December rebuilt the altar to the Lord.
Yes. Yeah, the altar's been rebuilt. They've got a lot of the priestly garments have been refashioned based on the instructions found in the Book of Exodus.
Amazing.
I mean, as near as you can make them out, because there are things in Exodus that are described, but not precisely described. And one has to assume that while God was meeting with Moses face to face, that Moses, because it says so in the text, that as you were shown,
right,
on the mountain, thus shall you do. So there are things that Moses was shown that were not recorded in the Book of Exodus. So we don't know specifically when, for example, that there were some garments described that were translated into the ESV as checkered, but the Hebrew word checkered could also be translated as fringed. So is the pattern of the turban, the pattern on the priestly robe, checkered, or is it fringed? We don't know. Moses was shown, not sure in the English what it's translated, and the stones. This is something else that was in something else that was described in the series Dig, the stones in the breast piece, which covered the ephod, which is where the Urim and the Thummim were kept, were some of the words used to translated into English. We don't really know what they mean. Several of the gemstones that were in the breastpiece, we don't even know what they are.
That's true.
So anyway, point being that the Temple Institute, in trying to recreate these things, are having to guess.
That's true. By the way, Derek has been watching me walk around between my office and his office. I was looking for something to eat. My blood sugar is suddenly dropping, and I was trying to find something, and I couldn't find.
Top left drawer of my desk.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Be right back.
Yeah. Yeah, I always keep some those nutty, salty, nutty bars. Yeah, that's where they're hidden. I had to hide them from Joe Horn. Anyway, so you've got getting back to the series Dig. You've got the Essenes and their secret plans. This Order of Moriah, the cabal that's trying to bring on the Second Coming by destroying the Al-Aqsa Mosque and instituting the construction of the second or the temple on the Temple Mount. Heavy rain hitting the roof upstairs right now. Yeah. Being a flat roof up there, we do pray that it holds out the water. We've had a couple of incidents here in this old grocery store where water comes through where it ain't supposed to. That is one thing the Dig does get right, however, that there are groups out there, such as the Temple Institute, who are actively working towards a reconstruction of the Second Temple and belief that they will bring on the Messiah for them, the First Coming, by being able to build the temple. But again, because the nation of Jordan and the Palestinians under the authority of the King of Jordan have authority over the Temple Mount, any work on a second temple there would be really politically problematic, to say the least. So good entertainment, but again, don't take your end times, your interpretation of end times prophecy from television. There is something that Sharon's been following, and I'm just kind of tap dancing to stall here while she
finishes. I'm chewing.
Yeah. And that is, I think we probably ought to touch on this, because as of this week, something like 25 million birds have been euthanized in order to prevent the spread of an H5N2 avian flu, which now has been confirmed by authorities as being spread through the air. It is being transmissible. It is transmitted through the air. It's been confirmed in a number of states here in the U.S., predominantly in the Midwest. Turkey producers, egg producers, chicken producers are dealing with this, and it had been limited to this point mainly to the Mississippi Flyway, Minnesota, South Dakota. Here in Missouri, we've seen a number of operators that operations that have had to euthanize, just an awful lot of stock to try to prevent the spread of this this avian flu, which is proving to be pretty lethal among bird populations. It's being spread by waterfowl, ducks as they move from place to place, farm to farm, taking that virus with them,
mm-hmm.
And the danger to humans is that this may ultimately be transmissible to humans. But it's having, even whether it is or not, it is having an economic impact. I was here listening to a farm show this week, and they were talking about the it's depressing prices for corn and grain producers because feed.
Mm-hmm.
There's not going to be as much demand for feed for chickens and turkeys this year because they're having to kill so many of them.
This will also affect trucking because you won't have to truck as many goods because so many of these fowl have been, these birds have been killed.
Although I will say that trucking is one industry that's not really suffering economically. I mean, you look at want ads and they are all, there's a negative unemployment rate for truck drivers.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you can get anywhere from a $6,000 to a $10,000 sign-on bonus if you're willing to drive over the road. Because there's such a demand.
Well, I suspect that part of the reason for that is because there are way too many people who have gotten involved in a drug habit that makes them unemployable.
That was,
and that's the real just tragedy about many of the drugs that are out there, mm-hmm. and made way too available and way too cheap. $5 hit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And suddenly you're addicted to something. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah, that was the biggest economic problem I had in the 4 years that I spent as an outside sales rep calling on steel fabricators and coal mines and businesses that supported those industries. I mean, and the steel industry could be anything from guys fabricating sporting equipment, goalposts, soccer nets, mm-hmm. things like that, basketball poles, to companies that were fabricating huge trucks that would carry 200 tons of gravel or coal at a single shot. So, a wide range of businesses affected when that have an impact on the steel industry, use steel as a raw material. And the biggest problem I heard from these companies in Southern Illinois was not that the Obama administration was anti-coal, which it is. It was that you couldn't find enough guys who were capable of working or who wanted to work or who could get a driver's license to get to work. Because of what Sharon talked about. A lot of problems with guys who've just opted to stay at home, play Xbox, and drink or take drugs, and were no longer employable. But because after the economy hit the skids in 2008, the government was willing to give them 99 weeks of unemployment. There was no compelling reason for these guys to get out and work, sadly. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean to sound heartless, because there are times, I've twice in my life spent extended periods on the unemployment rolls, which unfortunately is one of the byproducts of a career in broadcasting, but it was limited. You had 26 weeks, and then you had to get out and get off it again. And for all of the criticism my father gave about my work habits, work ethic when I was young, he did instill his work ethic in me, and mm-hmm. I wanted to get off of unemployment as fast as I possibly could because it was a sense of shame. I mean, there is a need for a safety net there where people are between jobs to help support their families. But sadly, there is now almost a permanent dependent class out there.
Yeah. And I think that's intentional.
That has been infantilized by our society, our culture, and the government that has enabled them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the things that I had to learn, and I haven't spent most of my adult life has not been in management, but I have spent some time, enough time in management to recognize another truth that my father passed along to me, which is that sometimes the only way to get people to perform when you're managing people is to apply stress to them. And that doesn't come easily to me because I don't like applying stress to people. I you know, am generally pretty genial, get along with most folks as long as they're not trying to hurt me or my family. I'm pretty easy to get along with. But when you're managing people, sometimes they have to understand, or even when you're dealing with people in a retail situation, when you're wanting satisfaction as a customer for something that's not right, you have to make it very plain sometimes that it's in the personal best interest of whoever you're dealing with for them to do what you want them to do. Unfortunately, again, our government in recent years has made it too easy for people to just kind of drift along at a subsistence level rather than actually get out there and exert themselves. And that has been, like I said, the biggest problem I heard in 4 years of meeting with anywhere from 8 to 12 people a day, people who were generally responsible for running a business, their biggest complaint. I can't find people to work.
Yeah. Well, you probably mentioned this a minute ago. I was in the middle of chewing so and reading through this website that I like to go to on a daily basis now. It's the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, the CIDRAP site. Mm-hmm. So if you mentioned the fact that this appears to be airborne,
yes,
then I apologize for repeating it, but that's a big deal.
But you can speak to this more intelligently than I can. I'm basically just repeating what you have told me. So,
well, the researchers actually took air samples, and they found the virus, the H5N2 virus, in the air samples. And because the infections have moved from very hit and miss areas that seem to be along a migratory path, so the assumption is migratory birds have brought it in, because this has been raging for a decade or more in the eastern part of the world, in Vietnam and in China, in the Koreas,
Korea.
Excuse me, in the Philippines to a certain extent, some in Japan. But we're just now starting, and I think we've even had a case or two in the past in the Canadian provinces. Mm-hmm. But now it's moved down into the United States, and it is hit hard. So if it is indeed in the air, and they began the sampling simply because it went from hit and miss here to very far distant farms in one state to now they're neighboring farms. Mm-hmm. If one farm gets it, the next farm gets it, the next farm gets it. So the assumption, it's no longer migratory birds bringing it in. It's actually, once it's there, it's in the air.
Mm-hmm.
If it's in the air and it becomes communicable to human tissues, okay, you bar the door.
Mm.
We're done.
So now H5N2 is not easily transmissible to humans, typically?
Well, according to Henry Nyman and much of his research, and I give him kudos to this, it's recombinomics.com. That is his website. Go under the news section, and you will see that for a decade, he has been examining the news coming out of Asia at what's going on with various avian flu species. He has indicated that he believes family clusters where a human gets it and then passes it to other humans within the family, and shows that there's not always a connection to touching a bird or consuming a bird or even walking past a market that was selling birds.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, people didn't contract it directly from the bird.
Right.
They got it from a human.
And then passed it amongst the family.
Exactly. Yeah. Now, the good news is that these H5s, and this is all the Fujian H5, if you go to Henry Nyman's website, you will find he discusses the Fujian H5 hemagglutinin and how that is always the one in the avian outbreaks over there and now the one over here. So forget the N number. If you see H5, it is very likely to be this Fujian hemagglutinin. H5, and it's a protein on the outer coat of the virus. That's what we're talking about.
Hmm.
That protein is like a little key that lets it get into certain cells. And so far, it's not very good at getting into human cells, but if it mutates a little bit or somebody plays with it and mutates it, it may become very good at infecting humans.
Hmm. And right now, this is showing up in a number of states through the middle part of the United States. But apparently, this originally entered the country at British Columbia. So there are some places to the northwest, Washington State, Oregon, that also have shown infections. So this is something that we're keeping an eye on for that reason, because if it does mutate to where it becomes human-to-human transmission becomes common,
right?
This could be a dangerous disease, dangerous
virus. We'll keep an eye on that. Yeah. But while we're talking about diseases, I want to discuss something that's also been in the news the last few weeks, and that is discussing this reemergence of Ebola in West Africa and the countries that were considered to be done.
Really?
It's all over. Everybody's happy. We get to go out again and play. There have been a number of people who have gotten sick again and spread it. And the theory is that this was through sexual contact. I think you and I may have discussed this briefly.
Right.
But now there's research ongoing. Remember, Ebola is a virus that's been very poorly studied, partly because of the environment where the outbreaks occur. It's not a very good laboratory, you know, because it's just it's difficult for the humans. You're all suited up in a hot environment. But now these are being taken into laboratories. They're being studied in ways that, and this is a sad part of research, that can make money for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
That's really what it comes down to. Can we make money from this virus? I think that those who are trying to get vaccines that are currently in development on the final approval list from the FDA and from the World Health Organization and all the various countries that have to weigh in on whether or not it can be used there. The World Health Organization has given the green light to at least one or two vaccines that are now being used in West Africa. But the theory is that this sexual contact is because there are certain areas of your body that need to be protected from your own immune system.
Mm.
Your brain,
mm-hmm.
your eyes, very important. And if there are proteins in your eyes that for whatever reason the immune system says, I'm going to take this out, that's a big problem.
Yeah.
We need our eyes to function. In order to propagate, you need to be able to create eggs and sperm.
Uh-huh.
So the gonads within males and females are protected against the immune system.
Right.
If it weren't, then, you know, your body would destroy your own sperm, men.
Ew.
Good thing it doesn't.
Yeah.
Don't want our eggs destroyed. You know, women are only born with so many to start with. Because of this, it's a great place for viruses to hide.
Okay. All right.
If they can get into those tissues, they can live for a long, long time.
Hence the transmission, apparently, from Ebola survivors to other people who previously had been uninfected.
Exactly.
That is... Yeah, an unexpected and disturbing consequence of what's been going on over there. And there's also a report that just came out this past week that now as Liberia has declared itself free of Ebola, they're suffering a measles outbreak.
Yeah, in fact, there have been in the Nepal area where the earthquake took place a few weeks ago,
mm-hmm.
I think 500,000 measles vaccines have been distributed.
Hmm.
When the rescue workers went in, one of the first things they did was vaccinate all the kids.
But why measles? I mean,
the theory is because they are being housed in tents.
Typically it's cholera is the thing that they're usually worried about you've got a sudden breakdown of a.
But that's a meme that we've been seeing over and over
again.
Measles is about to break out. Measles is going to be everywhere. We've got to have measles vaccines.
And whooping cough. Mm-hmm. And again, this article about, and this is from NPR just a couple of days ago, that whooping cough is now making a comeback in Liberia. And again, that's something else that here in the United States we're told is pertussis is becoming a problem because of those anti-vaxxers who are keeping their kids from being vaccinated. Well, you know, again, if your child is vaccinated and the anti-vaxxer's child gets sick, then why is that a problem for you?
Exactly. Hey, I got a question for you. You and I were talking about this morning. Many Christian parents who homeschool. Many of us are trying to find ways to keep our kids as healthy as possible, going with more natural foods. You and I are starting to buy milk here locally from a dairy farmer because it has no growth hormones in it. It's just wonderful milk, and it tastes awesome. Costs a little more, but it's worth it. It's so worth it. I saw a story, I kid you not, yesterday about a family who is being investigated because they wouldn't put their children in school. Now, many Christian families homeschool, But this family would not allow their children to watch television. They wouldn't allow them to do many things that normal kids do because they lived in a tent out in the middle of the woods.
Okay.
And when the CPS people said, "You can't do that. You're abusing your kids. Mm-hmm. Are you just trying to live off, you know, are you bums? You know, are you homeless?" No, they said, "We're part of the free-range parenting movement."
Free-range parenting.
Free-range parenting.
Hmm.
What the heck?
Well, you know, it sounds really bizarre.
It sounds like hippies all over again.
It kind of does. But, you know, truth be told, the problem is where we draw the line for government intervention into how parents choose to raise their children. We are hearing arguments regarding the vaccination debate that even Ben Carson, who is drawing some support as a potential presidential candidate on the Republican ticket in 2016, has said that parents should not have the right to choose whether their children should be vaccinated or not because it's a public health issue.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something we've been suggesting as a consequence of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, for the last several years, that when the government controls our access to health care, when they can mandate to us that we have to have health insurance, I mean, they somehow stretched, twisted, and reshaped the Constitution, the United States Constitution, in such a way as to find a constitutional right for Congress to tell us that we must buy a product, health care, health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Then the government will then take that a step further and say, okay, now in the interest of maintaining good health care for everyone, we have to tell you what you can and can do, what you must do, and what you must not do, because your health care decisions affect the health of all of us. And your decisions also affect the costs for health care for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And we're already seeing this develop. And of course, those who raised those concerns, like Sarah Palin, most notably, who was called a loon by liberal commentators for raising the specter of death panels, you know, groups in hospitals deciding which patients would live and were worth saving and which ones were, should just be allowed to die. She was called crazy.
No, that's actually in the bill. It's not called death panels.
Right, exactly. But we're also already seeing examples of this in the state of Texas. They passed a bill. And this is not the official title, but it's sort of colloquially known as the feudal care law. If a doctor treating a patient in a hospital believes that giving this patient continuing to care for this patient, treating the patient is futile, I'm sorry, you know, Mr. Gilbert, so-and-so, you're just not going to get any better. We can continue to treat you, but you're never going to improve. Frankly, you're going to die. And so we're just going to withdraw all treatment from you and allow the disease to take its course. Now, if the family were to object and say, wait a minute, we think he's getting better, we disagree with your diagnosis, doctor, then you can appeal in Texas to a medical panel at the hospital who reviews the case. And if they determine that if they agree with the doctor that care is futile, they will say, sorry, we are not going to treat the patient at this facility. So even if you do then find a doctor who's willing to continue treating a patient, you can't do it at that hospital. You got to move the patient to another facility that's willing to allow a doctor to administer care.
And if you can't find another one,
then you're out of luck. Then you go to another state. So this is coming. We have entered a post-Christian culture of death in which human life has no intrinsic value. Now, there are times, there are cases which patients and families may choose, and a patient may specify in a living will, if I reach this kind of condition where I'm not responsive, please do not take extraordinary measures to preserve and extend my life. Allow me to die. But a doctor, a non-family member, someone who doesn't have power of attorney should not make that decision, and that is where it's going. We are reaching a point where under Texas, and there's a movement in Texas now to revise or rescind this bill, at mm-hmm. least change it so that it's not quite so like, hey, wait a minute, you know, the doctor can decide to stop treating my you know, mother if they decide that she's not worth saving. But this is happening in Europe, which is far more post-Christian than America is at this point, where doctors are making decisions terminate the lives of children that they feel, you know, newborns, mm-hmm. who they feel won't have a healthy, you know, any kind of quality of life. Oh, this child
is not going to thrive.
Disabled, not going to thrive. We're just going to allow this child to die.
Well, at what point are they going to come in and say, oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Jones, you've really been clinically depressed for a long time, and we've tried all the meds, and we just can't, you know, it can't seem, you're not going to snap out of it. We really think the best thing is just euthanasia.
But that's already happening in Europe. That's the point. This survey that was conducted from doctors in Denmark have found that a third of them have already participated in doctor-assisted suicides, and some of them were patients who had no physical ailment. They were just depressed.
Oh, good grief.
And in Canada, and Wesley J. Smith, you really should read his blog at National Review Online. It's called the Human Exceptionalism Blog. He tracks this and has been documenting this for a long time. And most of us are so far away from that way of thinking, and we can't imagine other people thinking this way. But there is a growing body in academia and bioethicists who believe that this is right and proper. If a person is depressed and doesn't want to live and they go to a doctor and ask the doctor to kill them, the doctor should say yes. And in Canada, there are medical professional groups of, you know, professional organizations that are arguing that doctors should not be allowed to object. They should not allow conscientious objectors to people who, for whatever reason, you know, I'm terminally ill and I want to die and I want you to kill me. That doctors and nurses, medical professionals, should not be allowed to object on the basis of conscience. My religion does not allow me to take another human life. Sorry, the medical professional board of, you know, Ottawa or Saskatchewan or whatever says you should not be allowed to object. And coming back around to the United States, this is why we need to, as Christians, to do a better job. Governor Mike Pence of Indiana should have done a better job in defending the bill that passed there just, was it 6 weeks, 8 weeks ago?
The Religious Freedom Act.
That's right. The Religious Freedom Restoration Act. It's not about gay marriage.
No.
They're using that as a lever because most of us know people who are homosexuals who are wonderful people. They're lovely people. And I know this guy and he's a really nice guy and I've met his partner and he's a really nice guy. So why should, you Christians, we should not be allowed to object on the basis of it because they're nice people. Okay, that's all well and good. But this isn't about wedding photographers or bakers or florists. This is about doctors and nurses who are then, the next step, going to be asked to participate in abortions.
Exactly.
Or doctor-assisted suicides, and because of the precedent set under the law, are going to be told, you cannot object.
And it's setting up the prophetic end times, when we know in those last days, at the very least, in the seven-year tribulation period, and probably in the lead-up to that, in which we live right now, that we are going to be we're going to lose our religious freedoms. We are going to lose the opportunity to worship as we choose to do. And our own United States Constitution is supposed to protect that freedom.
Right.
It says that the Congress can make no law that will prohibit the free exercise of our religious freedom.
Exactly. Yeah. Respecting the establishment of a religion or restricting the free exercise thereof. And that is being taken away. And sadly, when Governor Pence, who I like,
I do too,
had an opportunity to defend that when he was called out on it by George Stephanopoulos on one of those Sunday morning talking head shows, did not really do. He tried to give a politician's answer. Probably somebody on his staff said, well, Governor, you're going to be asked about this. And when he comes at you this way, do this. No, what he should have said is, look, I sympathize with the case of people who genuinely love. So I disagree with their lifestyle, but if this is how they feel, mm-hmm. I totally understand. But you also have to understand that this is a sword that cuts both ways.
If we're supposed to understand you, then you should try to understand us.
Right. And first of all, those who are, say, gay bakers who are approached by Christians saying, I want you to bake a cake that says, I defend a traditional biblical definition of marriage. If they don't want to make a cake, they should have the right to say, I don't want to bake
exactly.
that cake. And there's the government should not be able to step in and compel that person to do so and pay a fine and attend sensitivity training.
Right.
It should work both ways.
Yes.
And of course it doesn't. But more than that, then what Governor Pence should have said, but more than that, the principle of the thing, because this isn't just about, you know, who wants to marry who. This is about other things that doctors, physicians, police officers, attorneys, whatever, may be put in a position where they're being asked to do something that they really object to, like take a human life, mm-hmm. participate in an abortion, kill somebody in an assisted suicide. And if the law says they can't object on religious grounds to this, then the law will not allow them to object on religious grounds based on that. Unless you get into really, really tweaking the law and splitting hairs and saying, well, you okay, if it doesn't involve that, whatever. But I mean, the whole idea of being able to object on religious grounds to being compelled to do something is a basic constitutional protection.
It is. You know, the whole irony about this idea of being forced into doing something you believe is murder. Up until now, in a court of law, you had to have a mindset that allowed you to know it was murder.
Yeah.
If you didn't see it as murder, if you didn't understand it as being legally murder, then you were considered not fit for trial.
Right. And sadly, in our world, there, again, is a growing body among bioethicists and academics that taking a human life is not necessarily murder. And that's the whole idea of personhood theory.
Yes.
And personhood theory, or the concept of personhood, was put out into the public sphere as somehow relating to the legal definition of a person as it relates to a corporate entity.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a corporation is not a person. Well, okay, fine. But personhood theory, as put forward by bioethicists like Peter Singer of Princeton University, argues that any living creature, even an artificial entity with a certain minimum level of cognition, should be considered a person under the law.
Yeah.
And entitled to not human rights, but personal rights.
Exactly. This is all legal. You know, an interesting sidelight to this is that we've got a couple of people in our family. I won't say who they are because they probably would like to not have to be mentioned, but wonderful relatives who are expecting newborns sometime this year. And it's become a very popular thing to have gender reveal parties. And these gender reveal parties, you know, my understanding is one of the things that can be done is that you have a box that's a beautiful box, sort of a neutral box that is unveiled. You open the lid at the gender reveal and either pink balloons or blue balloons come out. It's not going to be very long, dear friends, before those gender reveal parties will be considered politically incorrect.
Oh, yeah.
Because you are foisting upon that child an imprint of gender before he or she, and even that. Before it can choose.
Right. That even giving the name, mm-hmm. giving the child a certain name may impose a definition of gender.
Yeah. And this idea of an it also dovetails into personhood because Peter Singer believes that until you have cognition in his idea of what cognition is.
Self-awareness
that a newborn doesn't.
Exactly.
And it's only until you're 2 or 3 years old and maybe not even then.
And the flip side of granting personhood to entities or beings like, say, chimpanzees, dolphins, gorillas, really smart dogs.
Data.
Yeah, Data, you know, cyborg, mm-hmm. you know, artificial intelligence, you know, Watson or...
well, the smart dog I can understand.
Sure, yeah, Sam is, of course, a person. But under the law, they would be entitled to protection.
Which means the flip side of this, can make money.
Well, yes, of course.
By protecting them.
But the flip side of that coin is that you'd also have humans that would be non-persons. And again, children up to a certain age, which, again, as defined by Peter Singer, and he doesn't speak for everyone in this movement, of course, but his definition is having a sense of self over time, self-awareness, I guess, being the simple term. So that if you are not self-aware, which would apply to newborns, very young children, or perhaps adults with certain disabilities, mm-hmm. or somebody who's been in it, a tragic accident and suffered severe head trauma.
Yeah.
If you are not self-aware, you are not a person.
People
and
with Alzheimer's.
Yes. And people with Alzheimer's. Then you are not a person, not entitled to protection under the law. And therefore terminating your life would not be a crime. So that is where our culture is heading, where our world is heading. We no longer as humans have intrinsic value simply because we were created in the image of God, as God's imagers, his moral agents on planet Earth. And that is something that we Christians need to have better answers for. First of all, we need to be aware that this is happening, which is why we keep bringing up Wesley J. Smith and his work, because he's really...
He's been way ahead on
this. Way ahead of the curve on this. And he is pointing out that this is coming and it's coming closer to us. Like I said, as the story from Canada about the medical professional groups there arguing that doctors and nurses should not be allowed to conscientiously object when such requests are made of them. And here in America, as legal protections, constitutional protections for that type of religious objection are being stripped away from us.
Well, the day's coming very quickly when if you want to keep your license, you're going to have to agree to do those things.
He puts it, we're reaching a day where you're going to have to choose between your career and your conscience.
Yeah. You know what? As human beings, I know I feel this way, and that is that it so often feels like the only reality is where we are today, this world around us, this material world, this political, construct in which we live. But the truth is there is a true reality that is way beyond what we perceive, and that is God's realm. There is a kingdom about to emerge on this earth that has been there all along, but we haven't seen it. Mm-hmm. It's going to become real because Jesus Christ will be here. And it matters what you do in the here and now. Even if you don't see the other world, you can't see into the spiritual realm, it is there. And it is so important that you choose today to trust Christ as your Savior and King, to be covered in His blood so that you are pure in God's eyes. Because as Derek often says, there's only one question in the world that matters. It's what do you do with Christ? Mm-hmm. And that's a pass-fail answer. There is no grading curve. It's you either know Him and He knows you, or you don't. It's pass-fail, yes or no. And if you want to live eternally with Jesus Christ as your King, if you want to live what many people call living in heaven, if you want to live eternally with joy and with the others who have gone on before and to meet all these amazing people from the Bible, the great St. Paul and Peter and Mark and John, and John the Revelator, he's one of the main ones I want to meet personally.
Yeah.
You need to know Christ as your Savior. And if you don't feel comfortable with that right now, we encourage you to send us a note. Go to the Gospel of John. That's the easiest one to read, to get it, wrap your head around. Just find it someplace. Find it online. Find it. There are wonderful sources online for the Bible, blueletterbible.org.
BibleGateway.com.
BibleGateway.com. If you don't know of a site, write us a note, and we will be happy to send you the URL to a great source. The Gospel of John and the book of 1 John are the two starting places. If you've never studied the Bible, start there.
And maybe, let me look at PIDradio.com here real quick. Maybe in that sidebar there, we could put some links to good Bible websites and Bible study websites.
I think that's a really good idea.
I'll work on that today.
Really good idea.
Again, the show notes are always posted at PIDradio.com, and there's a contact us button at the top menu bar where you can send us an email. And again, in the right-hand column there, I'll add some links, some of the things that we like. Again,
You can also put those at gilberthouse.org.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons we started Gilbert House Fellowship, by the way. It wasn't just because we know that there are lots of you that are unchurched, although that is true. It's because not everybody knows how to start reading the Bible. Mm-hmm. At least over the course of however much time it takes us to go from first word to last word in the book of Revelation, first to last, covering the Alpha and Omega, all of it's about Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
No matter how, if we may, I think we're not going to get through it. We may not get through the Old Testament before Jesus returns, because we're going pretty slowly.
Yeah.
We're going chronologically. Yeah. So it actually is in the order that it happened, or the order it was written, at least.
Right.
We're trying to do this so that at least you get a grounding. And we're getting a grounding. Honestly, doing it the way we're doing it, I have learned so much more than I've learned in 50 years.
It's really amazing how much depth is in there. Just for as an example, just a little tidbit today, when you're reading through the book of Exodus, book of Leviticus, there are things in there that where they get really detailed about the garments that the priests wear and the construction of the tabernacle and how they're supposed to sacrifice the animals and certain parts of the animals that are to be burned. One of the things that I always thought was a little weird was the instruction that the lobe of the liver of the rams, the sacrificial rams, were to be burned on the altar.
Mm-hmm.
And come to find out that apparently in the ancient Near East, using the liver of animals as a divination tool was a regular practice. It was used to contact the occult and try to get information from the occult. And so God was telling Moses, burn this.
Mm-hmm. You don't get to do this.
Burn this. This is something that you're not going to do. And more than that, sending a message to the false gods.
Yes.
Of the nations that surrounded.
And that's what a lot of it was about. It was a way of showing up the false gods and the twisting of truth that was taking place.
Right, right. So there's a lot of depth in the Bible. And we've been doing it now. I think this is our 27th episode. And it has been, and again, we're only getting toward the end of the book of Exodus so far. We've done Genesis, Job, and now closing in on the conclusion to Exodus. And it just shows a much richer and more active spiritual war taking place through those scriptures than I ever learned sitting in church on Sunday mornings.
And once again, because there is a spiritual war taking place all around us, what we perceive in the natural world is just a tiny portion of the real full world that God created.
Absolutely. And sadly, to give you an example where the majority of Christian thought teaching is in America today, this past week, the book that was named the Christian Book of the Year by the Evangelical Christian Publishers Association. The Daniel Plan, 40 Days to a Healthier Life by Rick Warren and his Eastern mystic leaning and Muslim advisors, Dr. Daniel Amen, Dr. Mark Hyman, and of course, Oprah's favorite guy, Dr. Mehmet Oz.
Yes.
That is, ladies and gentlemen, your Christian Book of the Year, according to the Evangelical Christian Publishers Association.
That is sad.
Now, I don't know what their criterion was for selecting it. It could just be based on sales, but of course, that says a lot about the state of Christianity in America anyway.
Yeah, it does. So, it does. Well, what are you going to do?
A View from the Bunker coming up the next couple of programs, we'll talk about Turkey with, and not Turkey, bird flu Turkey, but Turkey the nation and its political initiatives in the Middle East. There was an interesting thing that came out just the other day that Turkey and Saudi Arabia have agreed to cooperate in backing the rebels in Syria who oppose the administration of Bashar Assad. And we'll talk, Cliff Garner, who spent several years in Turkey as an expat teaching English as a second language to people there, has a little better understanding of the political initiatives and motives of their president, Tayyip Erdogan. Mm-hmm. Erdogan is trying to rewrite the constitution of Turkey so that the president has a lot more power and fewer checks and balances on his authority. There's an election coming up at the beginning of June in Turkey. But the fact that the Turks and the Saudis are working together is significant. Turks, for one thing, are not Arabs. They are Sunni Muslim, but they're not Arabs.
Right.
They have been supporters of the Muslim Brotherhood for years. The Muslim Brotherhood founded about 90 years ago by Egyptians who were upset that the caliphate had been done away with, which was run out of Turkey, the Ottoman Empire. So they've been supportive of it, while Sunni Arabs, like the ruling House of Saud, oppose the Muslim Brotherhood because they don't want to see the caliphate restored, because that would mean the Turks would run everything again.
Exactly.
And they don't want that. But they're collaborating and working together in Syria.
Mm-hmm.
But significantly, all of the news about their cooperation left out any mention of the Islamic State or
exactly.
ISIS. So anyway, that's the program that'll be coming up this coming Wednesday. Tonight's program will deal more with economics because the bond markets went really weird this past week. There was a huge sell-off on Wednesday night. Thursday morning, it bounced right back up. So
there's a lot of that is happening in the con world.
Yeah.
And we're being conned.
Exactly.
That we're not being told about.
Mm-hmm. So Jerry Robinson of Follow the Money Weekly and FTMDaily.com that'll be the program posted tonight on A View from the Bunker. So until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.